The House will come to order. If you'll please rise, the flag salute will be led by Representative Dembro.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by the Rex Putnam High School a cappella choir from the North Clackamas School District. Their director is John Baker. Welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much, and you can see why this group is the 2008 6A OSAA state champs. So congratulations to all of you. We will now proceed to our moment in Oregon history. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This sesquicentennial history minute is from the Oregon Encyclopedia, a statewide project supported by Portland State University, the Oregon Historical Society, and the Oregon Council of Teachers of English, with generous support from the Oregon Cultural Trust. This history minute is from an entry written by Eckard Toy Jr., and it's titled Black History Month, Ku Klux Klan in Oregon. It was not uncommon in the 1920s to see fiery crosses and marchers in Ku Klux Klan regalia in Oregon. Historians estimate that the National Klan attracted more than 2 million members during the 1920s, and 35,000 of them were here in Oregon. In 1922, Klansmen won election to local and county offices in Oregon, and some won seats in the state legislature. A year later, Klan members and their allies resurrected controversial racial and religious issues that the legislature had earlier and rightly rejected. A bill prohibiting the ownership of land by aliens, for example, which it was aimed primarily at Japanese immigrants, passed easily. Other successful bills banned teachers from wearing religious garb in public schools and blocked public schools from using civics and history textbooks that were critical of the founding fathers. The Klan's influence on social and cultural life was longer lasting than its political successes, as Klan members attempted to impose their moral and cultural beliefs on other Oregonians, often splintering communities, churches, and social organizations. There was vigorous opposition to the Klan from church members, civic organization, minority groups, and a few politicians, and many newspapers across the state editorialized against the group, rightfully so. In the late 1920s, as charges of corruption and sexual scandals plagued the Klan in other states, most Oregon Klansmen quit the Klan, although some local Klans survived into the 1930s. By the time of the civil rights era, the Klan was only a fading memory in Oregon. And as a personal note, the Klan didn't care much for Catholics. All my ancestors are Catholics, and they were every bit, if not more so, ornery and stubborn and proud as I am. And it would have been a joy to watch their encounter with my grandfathers, especially my Irish grandfather, Irish Catholic grandfather, who enjoyed a very gregarious, likable fellow who enjoyed to have tip a pint or a bit of whiskey on occasion. But it would have been fun watching their encounter with him if he offended their family. Thank you very much.
Further courtesies, Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is my privilege and honor today to introduce introduce our honorary pages. They are from an elementary school that is within my hand's reach of my home. They're about three blocks away. And so with great pleasure, I want to introduce Marcus Hemshorn. And Marcus, he wants to be a geologist. Thank you, Marcus. And also Blanca Garcia. Blanca is part of the TAG program at Nellie Muir School. She helps run the student store in American government, dance, and Sunday school. Thank you, Blanca. Next is Julian Parker, also of Nellie Muir. And Julian, I really like your goal. He wants to be a football player. And lastly is Sebastian Murphy, and Sebastian also wants to be a scientist or an archaeologist, and I'm equally proud of you, Sebastian. Thank you for coming and helping us out today.
Further courtesies, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, up in the back gallery, you have, please wave and greet some folks from the Institute for Continued Learning at Willamette. They are interested in our process, are spending some time down here observing. They even sat through, a lot of them, some of the driest things in Revenue Committee you could possibly imagine, with interest and great attention. We appreciate that you're here, and we appreciate that you stay involved in our state, and want to greet you. Thank you.
Further courtesies? Seeing none. Verification of quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. All members are present, excused. Representative Witt. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed House Bill 2365, Senate Bill 139, 154, and 311, and adopted SCR 4.
First readings, memorials, and resolutions.
HCR 1, in memoriam, Gene Mader, 1916 to 2008. SCR 4, in memoriam, Hank Collins, 1951 to 2008.
Measures read the first time or pass the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First readings of House bills.
House Bill 2823 relating to health insurance. House Bill 2824 relating to payment of insurance claims and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2825 relating to reduction of funding of health services. House Bill 2826 relating to child labor. House Bill 2827 relating to child abuse. House Bill 2828 relating to internet posting and municipal budget summaries. House Bill 2829 relating to standards of conduct for directors of corporations. House Bill 2830 relating to Oregon free kindergarten program appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2831 relating to public employment.
Bills read for the first time were passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2041 relating to road machinery. House Bill 2234 relating to regulation of activities in the state highway rights of way.
Bills read for the second time were passed to third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
House Bill 2177 relating to assets received by Department of Veterans Affairs and declaring an emergency permits Department of Veterans Affairs to receive monetary and non-monetary grants.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer, is that your hand? Beyer votes aye. House Bill 2177, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2360, relating to trusts, provides that only last four digits of settlers' Social Security number need to be provided in certain trust-related proceedings.
The question now rises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2360. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Riley votes aye. Representative Widener, how do you vote? Widener votes aye. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Bruin votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2360, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2135, relating to residential rental property smoking policies.
The question now rises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2135A. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. Colleagues, House Bill 2135 establishes a policy requiring that housing rental agreements include a section disclosing the smoking policy for the rental unit or units and their premises. Henceforth, rental agreements must clearly tell tenants if smoking is allowed on the entire premises, if it is prohibited entirely from the premises, or if it is allowed only in limited areas. If it is allowed in limited areas, then the agreement must identify the areas where smoking is allowed. Colleagues, this bill warrants your support. Individuals need to be given the information that they need to make intelligent decisions for themselves and their families with respect to their exposure to secondhand smoke. Renters are often not receiving that information today. In committee, we heard and received testimony from a number of individuals who had moved into apartment buildings only to find themselves in units located next to or above those of smokers, and they were then essentially trapped there for the duration of the lease. Colleagues, as you know, smoke has a tendency to drift through windows, doorways, balcony doors, ventilation systems, and even through walls, and then cling to carpets and curtains. This can be a nuisance for us all, but for many, children in particular, its effects can be severely debilitating. Even in those facilities in which smoking is allowed only in outdoor areas, tenants need to know if their apartment will be adjacent to those outdoor areas. This bill will allow everyone, but especially children and adults who are acutely affected by secondhand smoke, to know up front if a particular apartment complex is the right place for them and if the unit that they have chosen is the right one. This bill does not bar smoking from rental units, nor does it tell landlords what kind of smoking policy they must adopt for their rentals, but it does establish clear communication between landlord and tenant, something that both landlord and tenant advocacy groups have been urging their members to seek. Colleagues, this is a bill that moves us in the right direction in terms of individual health, public health, and consumer information and protection. It's supported by advocates for both landlords and tenants, as well as by a broad array of health advocates. The original version of the bill had some elements that raised liability concerns for the Landlord Association, and in work group with tenants advocates, the bill was modified. This bill was approved by the Human Services Committee on an 8-0 vote. Honorable colleagues, House Bill 2135 is an important bill, and I urge you to support it.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dembro, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dembro, are you intentionally in the speaking queue? He is not. House Bill 2135A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2190, relating to valuations that are motor vehicle liability insurance.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2190A. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2190 protects consumers by restoring the balance of power vis-a-vis insurance companies when valuing a totaled vehicle. I stress that this bill only applies when a car is a total loss, and this is a very narrow set of circumstances. And the reason for this limitation is that the imbalance of power between consumers and insurance companies is at its greatest in this kind of situation. Many people depend on their vehicles for their livelihood, and consequently, these vulnerable consumers are sometimes forced to accept inadequate settlement offers because, unlike insurance companies, they do not have the economic wherewithal to refuse an otherwise inadequate offer and contest the valuation through an appraisal process. This structural imbalance is what this bill will improve. Now, let me provide an example. This bill can seem fairly complicated, but it's not. Suppose an individual, and by the way, this hypothetical I'm going to throw out is actually fairly common, and this hypothetical is far more common than some of the hypotheticals I will use later in my remarks to address some of the objections to this bill. Suppose an individual depends on a $3,000 car to get to or from work, and that this car is totaled in an accident. Let's further suppose that the insurance company offers $2,000 to settle the claim. Although this is actually a 50% differential in the valuation, the consumer will probably be forced to accept the otherwise inadequate offer for two reasons. Number one, the consumer will not, under existing law, the consumer will not actually get paid until he or she actually accepts the offer, which creates a strong disincentive to contest the insurance company's valuation. And number two, the amount at controversy, $1,000, although 50% of the total value of the car, is exceeded by the transaction cost of contesting it, such that it's not in the consumer's economic interest to, for example, get a rent-a-car for the length of the probably a month or two it will take to resolve that dispute over $1,000, or seek counsel or other professional assistance. DCBS reports that this scenario is by far the leading source of consumer complaints among insurance issues. HB 2190 will change this scenario by requiring insurance companies to pay the undisputed amount, as well as provide information that provides the basis of that valuation. So using the same hypothetical I just used, the insurance company would pay the undisputed amount of the vehicle, $2,000 in that hypothetical, but the payment would not preclude the consumer from contesting that valuation and seeking the additional $1,000. And I want to stress, the payment of the undisputed amount does not waive or alter the legal rights of the parties in any way. All it does is relieve the consumer from the intense economic pressure to accept otherwise inadequate payment. The consumer is free to seek the appraisal remedies for the disputed amount, as provided either by their insurance contract or DCBS rule. So that is what this bill does. I hope I've explained the status quo and how this bill will improve the status quo, but I'd like to take some time to address some of the controversies that emerged in this bill in committee, as well as several members from both parties who have asked me about this. And indeed, I hope I'm not mischaracterizing the debate in any way, shape, or form. If I am, I appreciate if someone would correct me. However, there is potentially, this came up in committee, a narrow set of circumstances in which if the third party loss exceeds the undisputed third-party loss exceeds the first party's policy limits. And let me explain what that means. Let me say, for example, the representative from Happy Valley. I'll use him as an example. Let's pretend although I'm a very cautious driver, let's pretend I drive negligently and hit and total his automobile. In that case, I am the one with the insurance policy. My policy limits are $50,000 in this case. I would be the first party, and the representative from Happy Valley would be the third party. If the representatives totaled, let's pretend I totaled this car in this accident, if the undisputed amount exceeded my policy limits, in this case $50,000, that's when it's a very narrow set of circumstances. That's what the objection centers around, this very narrow set of circumstances. And let me explain to you why it actually is not a problem. I'm going to use another hypothetical. All of us know that the whole point of serving as Speaker and Majority Leader are the great premium parking places in our garage. You might have further noticed that the Majority Leader recently purchased a brand new car, a nice shiny red Toyota Camry. We also might have noticed that the Speaker may or may not at times be a reckless driver in our garage. Let's pretend. I am in trouble. Apologies, Mr. Speaker. Let's pretend that the Speaker, one morning, probably he's enraged by his carpool companion, is driving recklessly and totals the Majority Leader's car. Let's assume that the Speaker has policy limits of $20,000. Currently, by the way, I want to add as a parenthetical, the minimum policy limit allowed by law in Oregon is $10,000. Yesterday, the Consumer Protection Committee unanimously passed a bill that raised that to $20,000, such that if you're deeply troubled by this narrow set of circumstances, I encourage you to support that bill. But I digress. Let's pretend the Speaker had what hopefully will soon be the policy minimum, which is $20,000, and let's further assume the Majority Leader's car is worth $30,000, and it's totaled in this wreck. In this case, the Speaker's insurance company is required to pay the policy limits, $20,000, leaving an uncompensated differential of $10,000. Now, fortunately, most people who have cars that are worth more than the minimum policy limits probably have insurance themselves. So this is the first reason why this really should not be a problem. The Majority Leader, the remaining differential, should be compensated by her own insurer. However, that insurer would potentially have a subrogation claim against the Speaker for $10,000. This also is not a problem. And the reason why is because in this case, the amount at issue, the disputed amount, $10,000, is dwarfed by the actual transaction costs of availing themselves in the tort system. The insurance company would actually have to take the Speaker to court and prove negligence, duty breach, causation, damages. It's actually quite a bit harder to do than many of us might think. In this case, they simply will not pursue the claim, and indeed the third-party insurers will bear the economic loss. But this will not in any way, shape, or form put the Speaker in economic damage. However, let me change the hypothetical to an even more extreme set of circumstances. Let's pretend that the Majority Leader were driving a Ferrari or some car worth $1,000 in the same hypothetical, such that there's an $80,000 disputed amount that exceeds the Speaker's policy limits. This also probably is not a problem in applied terms, because although the differential, $80,000, now exceeds the transaction costs and the third-party insured would have an interest in pursuing claims, they are not going to pursue claims against our most vulnerable. This just does not happen. That's why most cases, as is, settle for policy limits, because there's no vote, there's no purpose in trying to squeeze blood from a turnip. This is not going to damage our most vulnerable in any way, shape, or form. It will not happen. Finally, there is potentially a hypothetical scenario in which, let's pretend Bill Gates or somebody very wealthy totals a very expensive car, and that Bill Gates systematically underinsures, gets, say, $20,000. This is the one situation in which actually the person might be potentially vulnerable. But this also is not a problem, because if a very wealthy person is negligent, B, causes economic damage, and C, systematically underinsures, it's entirely appropriate that that person bears the economic loss associated with their actions, with their negligence. This bill is simply, these objections are not a problem. House Bill 2190 is an improvement to current public policy and will not harm consumers in any foreseeable way. I've tried to explain a fairly complicated set of law to this chamber. Perhaps I've done my best, but perhaps if anyone still is confused, or is indeed more confused because of my remarks, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having been involved in this line of business for the last 30 years...
To the bill.
I can say a good bill should pass.
Further discussion? Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I wasn't...
To the bill?
To the bill. I'm not certain why I'm confused. I thought I knew why I voted yes in committee. But I do think this is actually a good bill. But I was disappointed, and I voted with my chair, because when you have difficult issues like this, the two sides have got to learn to come together. There was some effort, but I think both the insurers and the Consumer Protection Agency could have done a lot better job if they had put out that real effort. And it is a bill that protects consumers, and I'm going to support it.
Further discussion, Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
I feared that. Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Will the gentleman from East Clackamas, does he have any idea how many other states have passed this law requiring third-party pay?
No, I don't have that information.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I was going to speak against this bill, and then I thought maybe the representative from East Clackamas had confused you enough. I want to point out why some of us are voting against the bill. I am not aware of another state that has passed this. A statement was made by the department in committee that there's no difference between the relationship that you have with your insurance company than the third party has with your insurance company. I can't imagine anything being further from the truth. My concern is something that I will freely admit is only going to happen in a small percentage of cases, probably 1-3% of cases. However, what I believe will happen in those cases is potentially economically catastrophic for the people who it will happen to, and they will be your constituents. And I'm going to make the attempt to tell this scenario, and hopefully it'll be more clear. If you have a $50,000 insurance limit on property damage and you take out a very expensive car, or you take out on the highway a truck that's filled with cars, or you impact a building, which does happen. We all have seen stories of elderly drivers who have, you know, pressed the wrong pedal and they've impacted a building. And you're looking at property damage of $200,000, $300,000, $500,000. Currently, even though you may only have a $50,000 limit, your insurance doesn't pay up front, so they will defend you. You have access to their legal help to adjudicate this claim, and then once the amount is settled, you are on the hook for the property damage beyond the limit. But you got the benefit of their legal defense. In this prepay, they will pay that $50,000, and then they will turn to you and say, we are no longer legally obligated to assist you in any way. And so what you lose is the legal assistance that you would normally get from your insurance agent. So now, if you did $500,000 in damage, your insurance agent has paid the $50,000 and put you on the hook. You do not have to be Bill Gates. You can be a homeowner with equity or a few assets to find yourself facing bankruptcy because of the property damage and the legal costs that you will incur. And that is my concern. I agree with my colleague that I think there's a solution here. I'm voting no because I don't want a unanimous vote going over to the Senate, and I'm hoping that the bill will be taken up again by the appropriate committee over there and that this issue will be addressed. Thank you, colleague.
Further discussion, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
Sorry for this being unannounced, but did you ever get the numbers on how many actual claims that they had on this, or how many people have actually called in and complained on the third-party situation? I was never able to get that number, and I'm wondering if you ever were able to.
Mr. Speaker, I don't actually recall that being discussed in committee. That number has not been given to me. However, I would say that the third party, I don't believe that data would exist because it's currently not tracked. Before this bill is enacted, I can't imagine that DCBS tracks that statistic in that form. They would track consumer complaints, but I would be very surprised if they further divided them between first party, third party, and whether or not the policy limits were exceeded by undisputed amount of third claim. I just don't think that data exists. I suspect not, but I certainly haven't heard it if it does.
Representative Widener.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I too am one who did not support this bill for many reasons. Even though I believe it is a good bill and has potential, there were problems that I saw in it, one that my colleague had discussed earlier. And another one is when I was trying to find out the numbers or the consumer complaints on this from DCBS, I never could get a firm number. I've heard numbers of 30 complaints, 32 complaints, and that's not very many complaints that you have over a session to go and rewrite or change the rules. And the third-party situation is something that doesn't happen very often. As a representative was speaking on the bill, he was covering second-party accidents in some of his discussion. Those are already covered where both insurance companies come together and mediate it out. The third party is the third car that gets hit. So if you hit one car and it drives it into another car where it comes into play. And I was one of the ones concerned about people not having enough limits on the insurance. But another reason why I'm not supportive of it, it's not something that happens that much, and we can't really find or get any real exact numbers on how many times this comes into play to if we should make a change on this bill at this time. So I'm hoping that the Senate takes a good look at this and gets those firm numbers and straightens it out if it goes over to that side. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? I'm sorry, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry that I'm so late to click in here. But I just wanted to read
to the bill.
To the bill, thank you. That even if this is from DCBS, addressing the issue of which we were just discussing, even if the insurer were to pay the third-party claim and exhaust the limits of the policy, that insured's policyholder, the at-fault driver, would be in no worse a position than he or she was in before. If her insurance is not adequate, she is liable for the damages in excess of her coverage, regardless of whether the insurer pays the undisputed amount or not. This is a good bill, colleagues. Please do vote for this bill. It's a good bill for consumers.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close?
Mr. Speaker, I would like to briefly address the point raised, the fair point raised by the representative from Wilsonville. First, he speculated that this might occur in 1, 2, 3% of cases. Frankly, I don't think it will ever occur in an actionable way in the state, even perhaps once in a generation. Also, the concern expressed there was the total amount of property damage. For example, if there are buildings or if the vehicle contained expensive equipment. This bill, House Bill 2190, only requires the insurer to pay the undisputed amount of the third party's vehicle. And it's only the only situation in which the actual undisputed amount of that vehicle itself exceeded the first policy party limit, the first party policy limits, such that even if there's a catastrophic amount and that amount exceeds, let's say then there's a subsequent building, other property damage, and that total amount exceeds the policy limits, which might happen, That's not an issue in this bill. That should not be implicated here. I wanted to clarify that. Colleagues, this is a good bill. I urge your support.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? Thompson votes no. The Speaker votes aye. House Bill 2190A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5034, related to state financial administration and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5034A. Representative Girard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5034 comes to us today from a unanimous decision by your full Ways and Means Committee. House Bill 5034 modifies the dates on existing capital construction limitations for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and makes a number of changes to capital projects at the Oregon Military Department. Senate Bill 338 contained a number of economic stimulus projects. The limitation for the community college stimulus projects was inadvertently set to expire on June 30, 2009. A number of these projects were expected to take longer than that to complete. So Section 1 of this bill simply extends the expiration date for those projects for two more years to June 30, 2011. It should be noted that no changes were made to the amounts of the projects. The rest of the bill primarily allows the Oregon Military Department to increase some federal fund limitations as well as transfer funds between existing capital construction projects. The department routinely requires these kinds of actions as the biennium proceeds and actual costs and funding sources are known for each of the capital projects. And for the benefit of the representative from East Clackamas, I will be more than happy to go into full detail on Camp Withycombe, should he ask. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5034.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Girard, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilman, how do you vote? Gilman. Representative Gilman votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Kenemer votes aye. I'm sorry, Representative Kenemer was off the floor. So we have a situation that the, just so we're aware, when you're using the fingerprint voting thing, if you're using that, you need to stay on the floor and make sure that it's recorded. So if it doesn't record within the 30 seconds, then you can cast your vote by showing a thumbs up or a thumbs down. In this case, the chair would request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Kenemer to cast a vote on House Bill 5034A. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. So just a reminder to all of us, it's not as opposed to pressing the button on your desk where you can see if it stays red or green, the fingerprint. I just encourage all of us, as we're using the fingerprint voting device in the future, to make sure your vote is recorded, and then after the 30 seconds, you're free to leave the floor. You will see your vote up on the board. You just obviously don't have the ability of being at your desk. House Bill 5034A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5042, relating to state financial administration and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 5042A. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5042A establishes additional amounts of authority for the Department of Administrative Services to issue lottery revenue bonds. The committee increased lottery bonding authority by $36.9 million to enable the Department of Administrative Services to proceed with its next planned lottery bond sale without reducing or eliminating projects that were previously approved by the legislature in 2007. The increased authority will be used to fund cash reserves to pay debt service in the final year the bonds are outstanding. The initial budget was developed assuming issuance, the initial budget was developed assuming insurance surety agreements would be used in place of cash reserves. However, with the disruption of the bond insurance market, the issue of the use of sureties is no longer cost effective. The Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5042.
Is there further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Probably shouldn't, but I will.
Thank you.
Reluctantly, he does.
I think what you just said is that we need to increase the bonding amount in order to maintain the reserves that are required by the bond indenture because we can't buy the insurance at a reasonable cost. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Ways and Means, we voted in favor of this because if we're going to do this bonding, we need to assure that we can qualify for the bonds. But what we're really dealing with in this bill and others is that there was about $1 billion of bonding that was approved in 07 that has not yet been implemented. The bonds have not been sold yet. 07 was a long time ago. We're now in 09. We're in a different economic situation, and I would hope that our co-chairs and our leadership will consider each of the bonding issues that are subject to this bill and ask the question, if these bonds were to be coming up for consideration today, would we approve them? Because we haven't incurred this additional $1 billion of debt yet, and the cost on $1 billion of debt is going to be somewhere from between, you know, $275 to $400 million a biennium in payments from now on. And so we should remember that when you live on credit, you die under debt.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes no. Representative Cameron votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Clem votes aye. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes aye. House Bill 5042A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2224, relating to criminal records checks.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2224. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2224 comes to you from the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Barely corralled, but expertly executed by the representative from Central and East Salem, and often colorfully narrated by the representative from Happy Valley. House Bill 2157, back in 05, prior to my service, gave agencies the authority to conduct criminal background checks on a wide array of employees, vendors, and volunteers. It appears as though there was an oversight as it relates to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that's DFW. For my friend from Boring, that is not a reference to a Texas airport. The agency has had its ups and downs and will never return to its glory days when the representative from southwestern Oregon was there, but they have a huge responsibility for regions of our state, and this is a very small fix that brings them in line with other agencies. So you can see in your summary that most agencies have the authorization in statute from the language that I previously referenced, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife needs the same, and that's what this bill does. It gives Oregon Fish and Wildlife the authority to require fingerprinting in order to run criminal background checks on people who are, number one, employees, secondly, volunteers, and lastly, provide services to the department. There are numerous other reasons under that that I will forego at this time and urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gilliam, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Gilliam is in great. How do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2224, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2315, relating to records in possession of Department of Public Safety Standards and Training and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2315A. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, as currently configured, Oregon's public records laws are presumed to be subject to public disclosure unless specifically exempted. Certain records are unconditionally exempted, and certain others are exempted unless the public interest requires disclosure. Currently, records relating to an ongoing investigation before the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training are not exempt, conditionally or otherwise. What we have in House Bill 2315, in its A engrossed version, is a tool for the Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training to be able to conduct their investigations in an orderly process. What it does is that it indicates that during the investigatory stage that those records are not subject to public disclosure unless there is a public interest that compels their disclosure. In negotiations with other interested parties such as the ACLU and the Oregon Newspapers Association, an oversight was inserted into the amended version of the bill, which will require that after either an investigation regarding fitness or the initial investigation regarding employability, that a report is to be issued by the DPSST and that that report becomes public record. With these amendments, DPSST ensures the integrity of an open investigation. It protects the rights of the individual to receive a full and impartial investigation so that this doesn't play out in the press of the alleged misconduct, consistent with the principles of fairness and due process, while likewise protecting the rights of the public to access the disclosable public records as soon as the investigation is complete. I urge your aye vote on this measure.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Siegler, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. House Bill 2315A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2562, relating to vehicle size limits and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2562. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2562 raises the maximum length of a school bus in Oregon from 40 feet to 45 feet. This is because there are only basically three school bus vendors, probably in the entire country, that school districts can buy from, and one of them, one of the big ones, Bluebird, is coming out with a very good, very safe, very nice school bus that is 40 feet 9 inches. And it has huge safety improvements in it. And if we do not change this law, then school districts in the state of Oregon will not be eligible to even bid for this particular bus. So in the interest of giving our school districts an opportunity for competitive bidding in school buses, we think it is a reasonable thing because this is a very, these are very safe vehicles, and that by raising this limit, we will give our school districts an opportunity to have this new bus or any others that are coming along that have these kinds of safety improvements. I urge your aye vote. This is a very simple bill. It has safety and the competitive advantages of having more than one vendor in mind for our school districts. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Widener.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I too would urge your aye vote on this. All of our school bus drivers are CDL licensed school bus drivers. They go through rigorous training to drive buses. We're looking at an additional 5 feet, which could lend itself to adding another row, two buses. That way we don't have to take two buses to sporting events, and it could have a negative fiscal impact for our school districts as well. So I strongly urge everyone to vote aye on this measure. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 2562, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
HJR 10, declaring March 2009 American Legion Month.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of H.J.R. 10. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Dear colleagues, today I bring you House Joint Resolution 10 from our House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services, who passed this resolution with a unanimous vote. I was contacted by members of the Ben American Legion to introduce this bill, declaring March 2009 as American Legion Month. The resolution before us explains that the American Legion was founded in March 1919 and chartered by Congress in September 1919 as a patriotic wartime organization. My father was a lifetime American Legion member, and I've been a member of that same North Carolina post. I want to remind all of you of the services to our veterans and community which the American Legion has provided and continues to provide. It was responsible for the original GI Bill that enabled millions of veterans to obtain education and home loans. It was responsible for creating the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. I've attended Boys State, and I'm sure we have members here today who also attended Boys State and Girls State. On the staff measure summary lists the other wonderful American Legion programs for our veterans and our community. I would encourage you to look that over. I'm sure there's members here who participate in the American Legion baseball program. Within our state of Oregon, there's 25,000 Legionnaires who belong to 120 posts across Oregon. There's more than 10,000 members of the Sons of the American Legion and the American Legion Auxiliary statewide, volunteering thousands of hours to assist our veterans and their communities. Members, I urge you to vote for this resolution to honor the service of the American Legion and its members by voting for this bill declaring March 2009 American Legion Month. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. H.J.R. 10, having received the constitutional majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 139 relating to Oregon State Board of Nursing. Senate Bill 154 relating to Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program. Senate Bill 311 relating to Oregon Tort Claims Act and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 54 relating to certified statements of payroll records for public works.
Bills read for the second time are passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Announcements. I would note that we are, as we are now into daily floor sessions, it's our intent, at least for the foreseeable future, of avoiding Friday floor sessions wherever possible. So there is going to be at least one Friday, and then I think it's the Friday before spring break week, because we are not in session on Monday, that we will have to be in on that preceding Friday. But in general, our intent is to not be in session on Friday, and there have been discussions about granting rule suspension so we can advance the calendar in terms of second readings as though we were in session on Friday, but without the burden of everybody having to be here into the late morning on Friday. That will not be true for the rest of the session, but for the next several weeks, hopefully that will be true. Further announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring to you some good news in the times that we're going through. I'm happy to announce the Oregon Shakespeare Festival opened up their 74th season over the weekend. And if you have any ability to come down to Ashland and watch the shows, there is a just wonderful production of The Music Man that's being produced by the Oregon Shakespeare Festival that your family will be delighted by. So the 74th season is open. The season is being dedicated to Richard Hay, who's been with the festival for 50 years as a designer. So I hope to see you in Ashland sometime this year. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are there further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, February 25, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, February 25, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.